before we start, I thought I'd better explain exactly what fresh science is all about. After trawling the country for the best in research, we've pulled 16 scientists together in a national competition to present their science at this forum at Science Now. And one of them, as a result of this process, will win a scientific visit to the UK, courtesy of the British Council. And Science Now is sponsored by the Victorian Department of State and Regional Development and the Commonwealth Department of Industry, Science and Resources. So, without further ado, allow me to introduce the first of our speakers, Janine McBride, who is Research Fellow with the Australian Crustal Research Centre at Monash University, to speak about metals coming from the mantle. Janine, thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. I must say it's most strange to be introduced to you by someone I wake up to every morning. Well, what I'm going to be talking about today is where do the metals in ore deposits come from? This slide here shows an actively forming hydrothermal system, and a hydrothermal system is a system where fluids are moving around in the earth transporting different chemicals and then depositing them. And about a few hundred metres beneath the surface of these active deposits, gold, potential gold deposits can be forming, and even deeper, you can have large copper and gold deposits. But in order for us to be able to access these in the future, we need to have the top layers of the rock eroded off so that we can get to see them. So how do we find old hydrothermal systems where we don't see these lovely surface expressions like we see in, say, New Zealand geothermal fields? Well, one of the important things to do is to understand more about how they form and why they form, and part of this is knowing where the metals have come from. Now, there's quite a bit of controversy in the scientific community about where the metals have come from. Do they come from the crust, or do they come from the mantle? Now, myself and my colleagues from CSIRO and Monash University, listed here, decided to study the source region of a giant hydrothermal gold deposit called the Ladalam Gold Deposit, Lihir Island in Papua New Guinea, in order to try and understand where the metals were actually coming from. Most models up until recently have thought that the metals have come from the crust. So that's dominated most of the scientific thinking and exploration models for finding these deposits. Whereas the work I'm going to show you today is that the metals are actually coming from the mantles. So this is having implications for how we go and look and find other big deposits of gold or copper. So what's new about our approach? What is it about our work that means that we might be able to answer this question when other people haven't been able to? Well, firstly, we've got an amazing bunch of rare samples. Now, these were dredged from the seafloor from an undersea volcano that's erupted from deep beneath the earth, grabbing pieces of the mantle and the crust as it's come up through, bringing them to the seafloor where we can sample them. So it's like a drill hole about 70 kilometres deep into the earth. So about as far away as from here to Phillip Island. So it's a very long way. The other important thing about our approach is that we're using a new technique called rhenium osmium isotopes. Now these it's relatively newly developed, and it's very important in the study of metals because both these elements are metals themselves, which means that when we trace what they're doing within the earth, they're telling us about the movement of the metals. The most previous work hasn't looked at metallic elements to do this, so this is the first technique which is able to directly study where the metals have come from. Well, the important question, why do we care? Well, there's potential volcanic host rocks for the large ore deposits are actually relatively common around the world, but only a very few contain really large deposits of gold, copper. So we're trying to find a way, using different techniques, to try and predict which ones and where they will be. And if we can do this, it means that in the future, finding these large deposits of gold and copper might be much easier. And it's also interesting in a fundamental science way, is that it's telling us how the metals and different elements are moving around in the crust and the mantle. So just to remind you about plate tectonics, I just want to introduce the concept of plate tectonics, because these types of deposits tend to only occur in certain situations, and that's where two of the Earth's plates collide and one is forced deep beneath the other into the mantle. So, for example, this is the Pacific plate outlined here, Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea. So this is our study area. You're seeing the Pacific plate being thrust in this direction up against here. And so this is the process of subduction is the important factor for allowing these things to occur. So the specific area we're studying is in here, Lihir, which is near Papua New Guinea. And this is the Pacific plate crashing or slamming into the Australian plate, and this is being forced underneath, and that is causing volcanism to form, which is forms parallel to the trench or the plate boundary. And we've studied volcanic rocks and pieces of the mantle from this region here. So this is just a schematic sketch of subduction and process in progress. So we have, for example, the Pacific plate crashing into the Australian plate and being forced deep down into the mantle. So this is the convecting mantle here in the orange-yellow. That's the mantle that is capable of flowing, and it's the flow in this mantle that's driving plate tectonics and making these plates move. Above we have a brittle mantle which is not capable of flow, which is attached to the overlying oceanic crust, or in some cases continental crust. So when this is forced deep down into the Earth, at a certain point, the sediments and material from that used to be sitting on the sea floor become unstable. They're very unhappy, so they start to release lots of water and material into the overlying mantle of the plate that it's being thrust under. And this causes volcanism, so this area can start to melt and you see volcanic chains along parallel to where the plates are meeting. So what we've done is we've studied rocks from this region here that, remember, have been carried to the surface. So we've studied pieces of the veined mantle, so the mantle that's interacted with these fluids. So these are cracks that have been filled with different type of rock material. We've also studied pristine mantle, so mantle that's as it always was, bits of the volcano itself, and the ore deposit, which sits up here as well. So those are the types of rocks that we collected and have been studying. And this is an example of one of these rocks. This is a piece of the mantle from about 70 kilometres deep. So these are very hard rocks to come across. So you can see here that the mantle's actually green, not red like most people think of the mantle. And surrounding this, you can see a black rock. Now, this is the volcanic rock that's erupted and grabbed pieces and then protected it as it's carried it to the surface and allowed us to study it. Now, what I do is I take this, well, what I think is a very attractive rock, and I crush it into very fine powder, and then I dissolve it with strong acids. So that very nice rock ends up looking a little bit like this, where I've put this rock powder and acids in this sealed glass tube, used my oxyacetylene torch to make it completely sealed, and then I heat it to high temperature, and every so often they go kaboom. But when they work, we're able to separate the different elements that we're interested in. Just to take you back to your periodic table, the two elements that we're interested in are rhenium and osmium. These are both metals, and they sit very near gold, silver, copper, and platinum. So they behave in a similar way. Osmium is one of the most dense elements, and it has seven different isotopes. Now, that just means that there are seven different masses. So when we analyze it, we have to analyze these seven different masses. And we analyze these elements down to the parts per trillion level. And just to give you an idea of how small that is and how sensitive this is, it's the equivalent of being able to detect the presence of one grain of salt in the equivalent of nine Olympic swimming pools of water. So we're detecting these at very low levels. And this is the machine that we do it on. It's called a thermal ionization mass spectrometer. And you have a magnet here which separates the masses so that we can count how much of each one there is. So rhenium decays radioactively to osmium at a set rate. We know what this rate is, so we can use this relationship to determine a lot of things about the rocks that they're in. Now, the important thing to remember, and I'll reiterate, is that rhenium and osmium are in the ore minerals themselves. So when we study them, we're tracing the source, and the signature is of the source of the ore metals, not the surrounding what we call gang minerals, which are the non-ore minerals. And another bonus for this system is that the osmium isotopic composition, or the ratios, are very different between the crust and the mantle, which, remember, are our two controversial potential sources for the metals. So, to go back to our subduction zone diagram, if the metals were sourced from the convecting mantle, you'd expect to see an osmium isotopic value of zero. If they are sourced from this region, from, say, zero to plus five, and this is the brittle mantle. But if they're sourced from the crust, or up here as well, we'd expect to see an osmium value of about 1600. So you can see they're very different. And that's part of what makes this tool so powerful. So remember, we studied veins from in this region and just the general surrounding mantle. So when we look at the metal concentrations, what you can see is that the copper concentrations in the veins, this is the yellow box here, are considerably higher than the surrounding mantle, which is this green material here. So most of the copper are in these veins that I was talking about. When we look at the osmium isotopic value, we see a very similar pattern, and that the very high values are within the veins in comparison to the average mantle. So if we look at these two things together, you can see that as copper concentrations increase, the osmium values also increase, which means that the osmium is definitely moving with the metals, and so it's going to tell us about their source. This diagram summarizes all of the results for our study. You can see that the subducting crust here, which is this material coming down here, plots way off the graph to 1600, so it's considerably higher than anything else we analysed. You can see the mantle over here in green has very low values, and in between you can see the veins that I was talking about, the volcanic rocks that have brought everything to the surface and formed these islands. and the ore deposits themselves. Now these all plot in between these two end members. So they're a mixture of the two. But you can see that these plot much closer to the mantle end member than this crustal end member, which goes right to 1600. What you can also see from this diagram is that these all have very similar osmium values, which means that these veins are probably the material that's melting to form these volcanics and potentially to provide the metals to the ore deposits. Now, what we also did is we studied the oxygen isotopes. Now, these tell us how much of the fluid is interacting with the mantle wedge. So it just enables us to quantify the amount of osmium metal. And you can see from this diagram that our data, which is here in yellow and green, all plots close to or above about 90% of the osmium coming from the mantle. So this is a clear indication that greater than 90% of the metals, the osmium, is coming from the mantle source rather than the crustal source. So just to conclude, the veins in the mantles in the mantle are enriched in metals, and more than 90% of the osmium and therefore the metals in these veins has come from the mantle. And when we partially melt or melt these regions, we can form these gold-rich volcanoes at the surface and ore deposits. So metals are coming from the mantle. So when we want to find other large ore deposits, we should be looking in places where there's a strong mantle influence. And that's all I've got for you today.
Thank you very much to Janine McBride and that presentation on where we get the metal that obviously spins the wheels of industry right round the globe. It struck me as interesting, though, Janine, that you spent such a lot of time digging around in PNG at the site of old volcanic activity in order to verify that these isotopes are emerging from the mantle and not just from the crust as we previously thought. Is it dangerous to start digging around and suggesting that maybe that's where we need to go to find more metal?
Well, the metals, although they're coming from the mantle, are no use to us until they're actually in the crust. So what we have to look at is how the crust is changing at the surface to see where there's large material coming from the mantle. So we don't have to go down to the mantle.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to clear that. It concerned me a little that we'd start some unprecedented volcanic activity if we were to start digging around further. Is there any question anyone would like to put from the audience? Please.
I was wondering, what sort of proportion of volcanoes derive from the mantle as opposed to volcanoes which come from, I'm not quite sure of the way to put this, but you have volcanoes which generate mantle stuff and you have volcanoes which generate other stuff. What proportion of the mantle ones?
Well,
that's a highly technically worded question.
Stuff, it's a very good one.
The mantle's actually highly important in most volcanoes that we see erupting, but it's the way that the melt gets to the surface that's important. Because sometimes, for example, if we had a volcano... Well, we do. We have lots of volcanoes in Western Victoria. If you ever drive through there, you'll see lots of cones. Now, they're volcanoes, and that's actually still an active centre. There could be a volcano there next year. It could be 1,000 years. But these volcanoes, because the lava's coming from deep under the earth, have had to punch through the continental crust, which is what we're standing on, which is much thicker. The mantle signature is lost, and they incorporate a lot of material. So the metals coming from the mantle also need to make it all the way to the surface without too much interference, if you like, in order to make these large ore deposits.
Then again, the osmium quotient would suggest that not much of it actually does make it all the way through.
Well,
I mean, if
there aren't that many large ore deposits, so I mean, it's a specialised system, and that's why it's so important to have these indicators to look for, so it can help you say, oh, we should go to PNG or Fiji or Western Australia.
You mean we haven't invented a plane system yet that can sort of fly over and spot this from 3,000 feet?
Oh, they try, they try, but no.
Another question.
Actually, I wanted to follow on from there and ask you a twofold question, really. One is, what's the next step? And I wanted to ask it in two ways. What's the next step for the sort of work that you're doing? In other words, where would you go? What's the next question you'd ask? And secondly, what's the next step in applying what you found? How would you go about finding these ore bodies?
Well, the first part of the question, what's the next step, would be to look for other similar situations if we can find these rare rocks, just to see whether this is a process that occurs absolutely everywhere. And the second step is actually underway, and that's part of what I'm doing at the moment. I'm involved in research, which is unfortunately confidential, but it's with the minerals industry and the government, so AMIRA and the ACRC, and they're funding us to actually take some of the results we've found here and have a look around the world and see if we can do exactly that, say, dig here.
Would we have to dig an awful lot deeper?
Well, we can't dig all that deep, which is why some of these deposits are hard to find. I mean, sometimes you can have a large deposit, but it's been eroded away. Mm. So it's gone, it's been dissolved. So, no, we can't dig much deeper than what we're already digging.
But we can be more accurate about where we start.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. So what you would end up doing is provide that sort of efficiency to the exploration industry.
Yeah, it would be much cheaper and more accurate instead of spending, you know, millions of dollars on drill holes in every volcano. We might be able to take a couple of samples and say, well, these ones look more promising, you should concentrate here.
Any other questions from the floor? Please.
Yes, Andrew Rennie, The Space Show, Southern FM. Would you expect to find ore deposits on planets that have not undergone tectonic activity based on
question.
What you've studied here?
Well, I would tend to think, well, there are different types of ore deposits. This particular type of ore deposit would be difficult to form, because in order to form this, you have to have the action of the tectonic plates colliding, forming these fluids and moving them through. So these large copper-gold deposits, I guess I would have to say I wouldn't expect to see them.
So we're not going to be mining Mars in the near future?
We might mine it for something else, not for copper and gold in this
Fair
way.
Enough. Anything else from anyone? No further questions. Janine, thank you very much indeed.
Can you hear me? I think. Oh, there we are. I've got it on now. Dr. Janine McBride from the Australian Crustal Research Centre, which is a title, I think, that's probably one of the neatest science phrases I've heard in a long time, at Monash University. Thank you very much indeed for inviting us to understand your very attractive rocks. Janine McBride.